Okay, so picture this. You're a law student,
Right.
and you're really just like trying to wrap your head around all the nuances of felony murder, right?
Yeah.
And then this like crazy question pops up. Can't simply possessing a firearm as a convicted felon, I
Right.
mean, just having it make a debt, well, basically turn it into felony murder in Kansas. I mean, it just seems so broad, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That's the kind of legal puzzle we're going to tackle today.
Right.
Thanks to a wild case from the Kansas Supreme Court. It's called State of Kansas v. Curtis Leon Underwood.
Okay.
Ready to dive in?
Let's do it.
Okay. So this Underwood case, right, it really forces us to look closely at the whole idea of the felony murder rule.
Yeah.
Like, what actually makes an underlying felony so dangerous that it can lead to a murder charge?
Exactly.
Fortunately, we've got the actual Kansas Supreme Court's opinion to work with and some really sharp legal analyses that break down the reasoning and the consequences. So we're going to try and give you a clear picture of the legal earthquake this case caused in Kansas.
Right. Yeah, sounds good.
All right, so to set the scene, we're going back in time to Kansas in the late 1970s,
Okay.
1974. Curtis Leon Underwood, he's just 18 years old,
Okay.
and he pleads nolo contendere to felony theft. Now, for those who haven't encountered that term before,
Right.
basically means he's not admitting guilt, but he's also not fighting the charges.
Right.
Kind of strategic legal move.
Yeah.
Now, fast forward to October 28th, 1978.
Okay.
Underwood's at a card game. Things get pretty heated over some stolen marijuana,
Oh boy.
and a fight breaks out. The other guy involved, Brewer, even has a shotgun brought to him at some point. Things are getting serious. Underwood leaves, but here's the twist. He comes back with a .32 caliber pistol.
Oh no.
Now, here's the thing. He bought this pistol legally after finishing his 2-year probation back in September of 76.
Okay.
So the fight starts up again, and Underwood shoots and kills Brewer as Brewer was allegedly reaching for that shotgun.
Oh wow.
Now, here's where the prosecution strategy gets really interesting. They hit Underwood with a felony murder charge under Kansas Statute 21-3401. That's their felony murder law.
Right.
And the underlying felony they're using. Unlawful possession of a firearm by a convicted felon. That's a violation of KSA 21-42041B, which basically says convicted felons can't have guns.
Okay.
They're trying to make the argument that because Underwood had that gun illegally, Brewer's death becomes felony murder.
I see.
But before the trial even really starts to start, Underwood's lawyers pull out a pretty clever move.
What's that?
They try to get his 1974 felony theft conviction thrown out, annulled, basically. Their argument is that probation officials back then promised him it'd be automatically wiped clean once he finished probation.
Oh, interesting.
But the trial court doesn't buy it. They deny the motion.
Oh, wow.
So that old felony conviction sticks around, meaning that unlawful firearm possession charge is still on the table as a possible basis for felony murder.
Good.
Now, that whole annulment thing is definitely part of the story. But for our deep dive today, we're going to zoom in on the big question about the felony murder rule itself.
Okay.
Makes you think, what are the legal standards for deciding when a felony is so inherently dangerous
Right.
that just being connected to a death can turn it into a murder charge?
Exactly.
And this is where the Kansas Supreme Court really digs deep and ends up changing Kansas law in a big way.
Yeah.
They come up with what's called the abstract elements test.
Okay.
And they're super clear about this. You can't just look at what happened specifically with Underwood and that gun during the card game.
Right.
You got to focus on the basic nature of the felony itself, kind of like taking an X-ray of the crime. You're looking at its core elements, stripping away all the specific details of how it happened.
I see.
So the million-dollar question becomes, is simply having a gun as a convicted felon, is that inherently dangerous just by its very definition?
Yeah, that's the question.
So to be super clear, they're not asking if Underwood's possession of the gun in that messed up situation was dangerous.
Right.
It's a much bigger legal question. Is it always dangerous for an ex-felon to have a gun, even if it's like locked up safe at home and never even comes out?
Yeah, that's a good distinction.
And get this, the court says no.
Interesting.
Their reasoning. Well, they point out that unlawful firearm possession falls under the category of what's called malum prohibitum.
Okay.
Now, stay with me here. Malum prohibitum basically means something is wrong
Here.
because the law says it's wrong,
Right.
not because it's inherently evil or harmful in itself.
Okay.
Think of like a parking ticket or jaywalking.
Yeah.
It's not like morally wrong,
Yeah.
but it's against the rules.
Right.
Now contrast that with malum in sile.
Okay.
That describes acts that are just plain wrong no matter what, like murder or assault.
I see.
The court's saying that being an ex-felon with a gun is more like a status crime.
Yeah.
It's a combo of being a felon and having a gun that makes it a crime.
Yeah.
So it's not that guns themselves are evil, but for certain people, like convicted felons,
mm-hmm.
the law says they can't have them.
Gotcha.
And the court goes on to explain that just having control over a firearm without actually using it or threatening anyone with it,
right.
that doesn't automatically put someone in danger of death.
Yeah.
The danger, they argue, comes from using the weapon, not just possessing it.
Makes sense.
Now, here's where things get really juicy for legal minds.
Okay, I'm listening.
To reach this conclusion, the Kansas Supreme Court does something pretty bold.
Uh-oh.
They overrule their own past decisions, specifically in two cases, State v. Moffitt and State v. Goodseal.
Wow.
These older cases had set a precedent that possessing a gun illegally could be the basis for a felony murder charge.
So this is a pretty big shift.
Huge. Underwood totally breaks away from what had been accepted law in Kansas for a while.
Yeah, I see that.
So to make sure we're all on the same page.
Okay.
Imagine this, someone with a felony conviction from years ago. They legally buy a gun after their sentence is done.
Okay.
But because of that old conviction, they're technically breaking the law by having it.
Right.
Now, if that gun stays locked in a safe at home,
yeah.
never used, never even seen by anyone else.
Right.
The Kansas Supreme Court, with this Underwood ruling,
yeah.
is saying that just having it in that specific situation doesn't inherently pose a deadly risk to others.
Interesting.
And the majority opinion takes it a step further.
Yeah.
They say if an ex-felon does use a firearm
mm-hmm.
and someone dies because of it,
mm-hmm.
that should be prosecuted as intentional murder, straight up.
Okay.
Meaning the prosecution has to prove intent like malice and premeditation.
Right.
The court basically felt it was wrong to use the felony murder rule, especially when it's based on just possessing a firearm
yeah.
to sidestep proving those key elements of intent in a homicide case.
I see.
And, you know, this decision kind of reflects a wider debate about the felony murder rule itself.
In what way?
Some people argue that it can lead to punishments that don't fit the crime and that it can let people off the hook when it comes to proving they actually meant to kill someone,
mm-hmm.
which is a really important part of our justice system.
Yeah, definitely.
Cases like Underwood, they really highlight this ongoing struggle between trying to stop dangerous behavior
right.
and making sure that the punishment truly matches what the person intended to do.
Yeah, I see that tension.
Now, it's important to remember that in the legal world, you don't always get everyone agreeing.
Of course.
And Underwood Chief Justice Schroeder, he actually wrote a dissenting opinion.
Meaning he disagreed with the majority.
Yep, he had a different take on things. So what was his main point of disagreement?
Well, his dissent focused on the idea of stare decisis.
Okay.
It's a Latin term basically meaning to stand by things decided.
Okay.
This principle stresses how important it is for courts to stick to established precedents.
Right.
To make sure the law is stable, predictable, and consistent.
Makes sense.
Chief Justice Schroeder argued that State v. Moffitt, that earlier decision, had been the law in Kansas for a good chunk of time, 13 years. And he didn't see a strong enough reason to overturn it.
Hmm. So for him, it wasn't about whether unlawful possession should be inherently dangerous.
Right.
It was more about the importance of sticking with legal rules.
Mm.
Unless there's a really, really good reason to change them.
Exactly. He put a lot of weight on keeping the law consistent.
Now, a big part of any major court decision is figuring out how to apply it in the real world, right?
Definitely.
And in Underwood, the majority addressed this whole issue of retroactivity.
Okay.
They didn't just say, okay, this new rule only applies from now on.
Right.
They were very clear that it would apply to Underwood's case, meaning his felony murder conviction got reversed.
Wow.
And it would also apply to other cases that were already working their way through the courts
mm-hmm.
if the defendant had properly brought up this legal argument during their original trial.
Oh, so it impact cases that were already in progress.
Exactly. And of course, it applies to all new cases from that point on. So
yeah.
this wasn't just some theoretical change. It had immediate and real consequences.
I see that.
Okay, so the Underwood decision really shook things up in Kansas, legally speaking.
For sure.
Can you break down the most important practical outcomes, especially for those of us who might end up working in law?
Absolutely. The biggest and most immediate impact is on prosecutors in Kansas.
Right.
They can't just go for a felony murder charge based solely on the fact that a convicted felon had a gun.
Right.
If someone dies in a situation involving an ex-felon and a firearm,
yeah.
prosecutors are likely going to have to prove the elements of intentional killing, like premeditation and malice, if that's the charge they're going for.
Makes sense.
This could make some prosecutions trickier.
Why is that?
Because proving intent is a higher bar than just showing that the person had a gun illegally.
Right. It adds another layer of complexity.
Exactly. Second, this ruling changes things for potential defenses.
In what way?
In cases where an ex-felon uses a firearm and someone dies, and the charge is now more likely to be intentional murder, not felony murder based just on possession. Traditional defenses like self-defense become more important and usable.
Oh, interesting.
Before, with the old way of looking at felony murder in Kansas, that unlawful possession charge could sometimes mean those defenses weren't even an option.
Wow, that's a big difference when it comes to fairness.
Yeah, it lets the court look at the whole picture of what led to the death instead of just automatically saying someone's guilty because they had a gun.
And lastly, it's crucial to understand that the Underwood decision puts Kansas law at odds with how many other states handle the felony murder rule.
Okay, how so?
Some states use something called a circumstantial danger test.
Okay.
With this approach, courts look at the specific facts of the case to figure out if the felony itself posed a serious risk of death or injury.
So they're looking at the context of how the crime happened.
Exactly. But Kansas, by adopting this abstract elements test, they're going in a different direction.
Yeah.
They're focused only on the inherent nature of the crime itself, in a theoretical sense, without getting bogged down in the specific details of how it happened.
Interesting.
So at its core, the Kansas Supreme Court in Underwood, they made a policy decision.
Yeah.
They weighed the state's interest in stopping felons from having guns against bigger ideas of justice, fairness, and the need to prove intent in murder cases.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, they chose to make the felony murder rule in Kansas more narrow.
I see.
They basically decided that the felony murder rule shouldn't be a way to automatically bump up a death to murder.
Right.
Just because it happened during a felony that's not inherently dangerous in a general sense, especially when that means skipping over proving the defendant's mental state and whether they actually meant to cause the death.
That makes sense.
So for you, our listener, especially if you're trying to make sense of criminal law, state of Kansas v. Curtis Leon Underwood is a huge deal.
Absolutely.
It changed how felony murder works in Kansas by creating this abstract elements test.
Right.
And specifically ruling that just having a gun as a convicted felon isn't automatically dangerous in a broad sense. So it can't be the only basis for a felony murder charge.
Big takeaway.
This ruling brings up a really interesting question for you to think about as you continue learning about the law.
Hit me with it.
How does Kansas's abstract elements test from Underwood stack up against those circumstantial danger tests that other states use?
Ooh, yeah, good question.
What are the pros and cons of each approach?
Right.
When you're trying to both stop crime and make sure the outcome of a case is fair.
Yeah.
Especially when someone has died.
Really makes you think.
Looking into those different approaches and why they exist.
Definitely.
That's a really valuable thing to do.
For sure.
And like the Underwood case shows us, even something as seemingly specific as a card game and a gun.
Right.
Can end up causing massive shifts in the most fundamental ideas of criminal law.
You never know what detail is going to change everything.
Exactly. Until our next deep dive, keep exploring the ever-changing world of legal thought.
Always learning.